followed to the letter, calling for immediate reinforcement once that was done. I repeat, Lord, where are they? This rogue force is causing me problems, and if it is reinforced before I am, we will lose Priestedlin. Dooku's image floated silently before Tarnath for a long interval before he replied.
They are on the way. Keep your foe engaged. Hold your positions. I have confidence in you.
The transmission went dead. Far, far away, Count Dooku smiled. That poor Tarnath was a feisty one, but a bit too cautious. Just like a banker, he reflected. But he was the right officer for the job. Things were going precisely according to plan. It just wasn't the plan Tarnath thought he was following.
An army travels on its stomach, I'm here to tell you.
Old Quartermaster Mess Bollinger stated, his bright blue eyes sparkling. No one before now had ever asked him the details of his duty as a quartermaster officer. And since this young commander, Skywalker was his name, had inquired, old Mess was not about to let him go without a thorough lecture on what he called the sinews of war. Carefully, Mess stroked his long, drooping brown mustaches and regarded Anakin balefully. He held up a bony forefinger.
Many think it's valor, planning, the offensive spirit that wins battles, sir. But I say pish. I tell you what wins battles, sir. It's logistics. The sinews of war, I call it, sir. Logistics. That's what makes armies function. Well,
he made a deprecating gesture with one hand.
That is, if they're not droid armies. With them, all you need is lubricants and spare parts. But with living beings, it's far more complicated, far more. We're lucky this time, sir. Clones all eat the same foods. But when you have other creatures along, well, you've got to figure in their special diets. Very complicated, sir. But it's been done. I know the formulas.
His voice trailed off, as if he were contemplating those very formulas.
Comet's Q! Yes, sir! It's Comet's Q that gets you to the battlefield, sustains you once you're there, and gets you home again. That's the combat support branches of modern warfare, sir. Chemical, ordnance, medical, engineer, transportation, signal, and quartermaster.
Quartermaster, we may have to supply Captain Slake's forces when we arrive on Priestedlin. Have you planned for that? Anakin asked.
Yes, sir, I have. You know, of course, that Priestedlin is an uninhabited world. No forage there for an army. None. Unless you want to poison yourself on the horrid plant and insect life. It's a quartermaster's nightmare, I'm here to tell you. And yes, Captain Slake's command is a mixed bag, I've been told. Humans and others, all living, breathing, eating entities who must be fed, clothed, and quartered. So before we shipped out, I took careful care, sir, to stock rations that I knew were palatable across the board, as it were. Food that we can all live off. And another thing, what does an army do with its waste? Aha! Yes, what an army eats is turned into waste, and you have to account for that in garrison and camp and depot. Ever consider that? No, I didn't think so.
You have dealt with Captain Slake, Grudo. Tell me about him.
They were in the shuttle going back to the Ranger after their meeting with Quartermaster Bollinger. I would also like to know how you came to be friends with Master Halcyon.
It would be better if you talked directly to Master Halcyon about those things.
Anakin was silent for a moment. I have asked him, but he's been very vague about it. I know the three of you were involved in the incident on Bifash. I've asked him indirectly about Slake, but all he would ever say was that he held no grudge against him and would work with him as his comrade once we reach Priestedlin.
Yes, that's Nejah Halcyon, fair in all things.
I know, Grudo, but I must work with Slake too. I have to know more about him. And since Master Halcyon is reluctant to talk about what happened, I have to ask you.
Is that an order, sir?
Grudo asked formally.
Yes, Anakin replied just as formally. If that's the only way I can get you to talk, it's an order. Zoe's rider, Slake, had established his reputation prior to the outbreak of the Clone Wars as the commander of a Republic corvette, Scarlet Thranta. His background was obscure, and it was assumed he had worked his way up in the Navy to command his own warship through talent and ability. Profoundly dissatisfied with the Senate's dilatory approach to dealing with the Separatists, Slake had decided to do something on his own. Without orders, he detached his vessel from its command and proceeded to launch a series of stunning raids on Separatist shipping and naval forces. He was immediately labeled a pirate, and a bounty of 45,000 credits was put on his head. But Slake didn't see himself as a pirate. He mistreated neither the civilians nor the military personnel he captured during his raids, and the proceeds from prize ships and their cargoes were evenly distributed among his crew or donated to worthy causes. The last transmission he'd sent to Navy headquarters from Scarlet Thranta set the tone for his subsequent enterprises.
While the Senate sleeps, a great evil threatens the peace and freedom of the peoples of our galaxy. Our politicians, who neither work nor sacrifice, have forgotten, if they ever knew it, that freedom is not free, that the price of freedom is constant vigilance. We, the crew of Scarlet Thranta, are the children of your beloved Republic. We are your sons and daughters. We are the sons and daughters of freedom. Follow us.
This message became a clarion call for oppressed beings everywhere in the galaxy. And in a very short time, Slake had put together a small but formidable fleet that not only caused considerable embarrassment to the Republic Senate, but served as a thorn in the side of the Separatist powers as well.
I know this because I was with Captain Slake. You see, Slake has the right personality to command, the personality to lead. Soldiers follow him.
Tell me about Slake the man, Anakin asked. Grudo's snout twitched.
Captain Slake is a commander you can talk to. He listens to every soldier, and there were many times I heard him tell his soldiers that the only difference between him and them was ceremony, privileges of rank, you know. He said that every soldier who fights alongside him is his sibling, that rank has no privilege in combat. Not with the sons and daughters, anyway.
And Halcyon? Asked Anakin.
He came to arrest us.
At the special request of the Senate, the Jedi Council had selected Jedi Master Najah Halcyon to command an expedition to apprehend Slake and bring him to Coruscant to stand trial for piracy and treason, not necessarily in that order. But orders were orders, and Halcyon obeyed. Halcyon's ship was Pluriod Bodkin. He shadowed Slake's fleet for weeks, waiting for an opportunity to pounce on his flagship and arrest him. He thought Slake had made a fatal error when he dispersed his fleet to various ports to refit and recruit and abort his own flagship Scarlet Thranta, made for Bip Fash in the Sluis sector. Halcyon followed.
But Slake didn't make a mistake, Grudo said. You see, we knew we were being followed. Slake also knew there was a Jedi in command of the Force sent after him.
How did Slake manage to capture Master Halcyon's ship? Anakin asked.
That was my doing, Grudo told him.
Taking refuge on the double planet Bip-Fash was a brilliant move on Slake's part. With its complex system of moons, sparse population, and vast wilderness areas, Bip-Fash was an excellent place to hide a starship.
It took time for Master Halcyon to find us, but he did.
Grudo tapped a suction-cupped tip finger against his snout as he contemplated a spot in a far corner of the compartment. In his mind, he was on Bip Fash again, reliving the event. He sighed.
I fought Najah Halcyon in personal combat. Just him and me. It was wonderful. Wonderful.
Halcyon's plan of attack had been simple and direct. Once he'd located Scarlet Thranta, he simply swooped down on the camp, disembarked his force, and rushed the place. Slake's defensive plan was also simple and direct. He had dispersed most of his crew to lose themselves in the Bip-Fashi towns and cities, keeping with him only enough men to operate a starship, and Grudo. The only being Halcyon found in the camp was Grudo, armed with every weapon in a bounty hunter's armory, hooting challenges at the Jedi and his landing party in Rodian.
"Where is Captain Slake?"
Halcyon had thundered. In answer, Grudo had hurled two knives in his direction. Everyone ducked except the Jedi Master. The weapons thunked into the ground between his legs, a clear challenge to combat. Halcyon picked up the knives, tested their balance, and went out to meet Grudo in individual combat.
"I never knew why he did that. His mission was to take Scarlet Thranta and capture Slake, not fight in individual combat. But fight we did, and everybody saw us. He never drew his lightsaber. When I dropped my knives and weapons belts, so did he, and we fought hand to hand. Ah, what a warrior. You know the business about Jedi not feeling anger or hatred? But that day, Nijah Halcyon needed a fight. He didn't fight like a Jedi at all. It was very strange. Very wonderful."
Anakin shifted uncomfortably.
"I've never known how Slake knew this fight would happen. When he left me in camp, he told me, 'Grudo, let no one pass.' He told me it was very important that I stand my ground. He told me, 'Grudo, have no fear. The Jedi will never hurt an unarmed being.'"
Halcyon had not wasted any time maneuvering to get a position of advantage over the Rodian. He just waded right in, and Grudo advanced to meet him. Halcyon's party formed a large circle, and some of them took bets on who would win. Their attention was fully focused on the contest before them.
"Halcyon seemed unwilling to use Jedi tricks."
Anakin assumed he meant the Force.
"And fought like an ordinary warrior. So I used his momentum against him. Many times I flipped him to land jarringly on the hard ground. But Halcyon sprang back up every time and came right back at me."
He hooted a soft laugh.
"He was fast enough to get through a few times, and he hit me hard enough to bruise, including a couple of bone bruises. The fight stopped when Slake stole Pluriud Bodkin. You should have seen Halcyon's mouth drop, like a door opening. Blop! Everyone stared as the ship rose up on a pillar of fire, getting smaller and smaller and then disappearing. Halcyon froze, eyes on the sky. Nobody moved. I could have killed him then, but I didn't. I knew the fight was over, that Captain Slake's plan had worked. There's no honor in killing an opponent when he's looking away, and I respected Nijah Halcyon for fighting like he did. He never once called on the Force during the fight, as far as I could tell."
He hooted softly for a moment, then said serious again.
"I don't understand why he didn't kill me after his ship was taken, but he didn't."
The command post was in a bunker deep underground. It was a hubbub of organized disorder. Officers and non-coms taking reports from the outposts, others passing on orders, staff officers dealing with the myriad details required to keep an army operational in combat. At the center of it all was the commanding figure of Zoe's Rider Slake. Sergeant Lalox approached the captain, came to attention, and saluted.
"Recon report, sir," he announced.
"Omen, I see you made it back again."
Slake nodded for him to proceed, and Lalox made his report, concluding with the discovery of Irk and Odie and the trip back to their lines. Slake held out his hand.
"Welcome to my victorious little army. Do you know if there are any other survivors of General Kamar's force?"
"No, sir," Irk answered. "That doesn't mean there aren't any, just that we didn't see anyone else." Slake shook his head.
"Too bad. We could use the reinforcement. You're a fighter pilot, Lieutenant? I'd like to assign you to an aircraft, but we're all out of them just now. But you, Trooper, you're recon? Reconnaissance is my eyes and ears. The enemy is constantly trying to outflank us and take out positions from the rear. That's why recon troopers are so important to me. I need someone to replace Corporal Nath. Would you be willing to take on the job?"
With Slake standing there, looking straight at her with his penetrating eyes,
It was very difficult for Odie not to shout out, "Yes, sir," but she didn't. Instead, she said, "If you don't mind, sir, I'd rather stay and fight alongside Lieutenant Irk." She swallowed hard, but couldn't stop her face from turning red at the words. "He's a pilot, sir. He doesn't know how to fight on the ground. He needs someone to hold his hand." Slake raised his eyebrows, glanced at Sergeant Lalox, who just gave a noncommittal shrug, and turned to Irk. She's my co-pilot, sir. Sort of, that is," Irk said.
"Oh?" Slake answered. "Come over here with me."
He gestured at a hologram map table behind where they stood. On it was a three-dimensional display of Slake's troop dispositions.
"Here, this dry riverbed is no being's land, the dividing line between our armies. The lines are very close together there."
He grinned wolfishly.
"This redoubt," he said, pointing at a fortified outpost, "is the most advanced part of our lines. It's called Isabel, and it's there to warn us of any change in the enemy's dispositions, any preparations he might be making to attack us. About 600 meters behind Isabel, but out on the flanks, are two more forts, Alai and Caudin. Here, where we are now, is the main position in our defenses. About 600 meters behind us is the final redoubt, Judlai, where you came into our lines. Judlai covers our rear. These five strong points are massively dug in, and each has a 360-degree field of fire, fully interlocked with the fields of fire from the other positions. So if the enemy gets through anywhere along our lines, all the forts can bring fire on him. Here, 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 and here are artillery positions, equally well dug in. But their guns are registered on every square meter of our own lines. So if the enemy breaks through, they'll be taken under direct fire. On the other side of this riverbed are the enemy's positions, occupying this large flat plain. This mesa back here is where the Intergalactic Communications Center is located. That was the enemy's objective, and I'm sure he's holding it in considerable strength. I'm sure that as members of General Kamar's army, you're familiar with how this place is laid out. Who's ever in command over there is smart. He tried 6 times to take us by storm, and we beat him off each time. Not without losses on our side, but we cut his droids down by the thousands. He took Isabel 2x, and we took it back from him each time. Now he's content to probe our lines looking for weak spots, attempting to outflank us and digging tunnels. Yes, he's got one going right now, at a depth of about 100 meters, headed straight toward Isabel. When he gets there, he'll set off a mountain of explosives and blow Isabel sky high. So we're digging a counter mine to go under his and blow it before it reaches Isabel. Be interesting to see who gets there first, won't it?
Slake grinned fiercely. What are our chances? Irk asked.
Before we attacked, I sent a message to Coruscant asking for help. Maybe it'll come in time, maybe not. Until then, we're on our own. But we've really messed up this guy's timetable.
He gestured at the enemy positions on the holo map.
My guess is he's waiting to be reinforced too.
What are you planning to do until then, sir? Odie asked.
Do? Well, I'm going to kick them as hard as I can.
The officer standing around the map laughed.
And you two, I can always use a pair of gunners up at Isabel. How about it?
Yes, sir.
Sergeant Lalox, get them fed, issue them some equipment, and get them up to Isabel. They can report to Lieutenant Denor for further assignment. Good luck.
He held out his hand and they shook. Lieutenant Denor was a harassed Bothan struggling with the responsibility of maintaining his outpost on 100% alert. It was he who had led the assault party that had most recently recaptured Isabel from the battle droids. Since then, the only sleep he'd been able to get was in brief snatches.
"You'll work in an advanced listening post covering Sector 5," he told his 2 new fighters. "I had 3 people down there, but they were all wounded and evacuated. So whatever you do, don't fire your weapon unless you're attacked. I don't want the enemy to know we've reoccupied the listening post."
With that, he disappeared down a communications trench. A sergeant standing nearby said, "Come on, you two. I'll take you down." Crouching low, the pair followed him off in the opposite direction from the one the lieutenant had just taken. After some twistings and turnings, the trench ended at a fortified embrasure.
Sector 5, the sergeant announced.
Bloodstains and shreds of clothing marked the spot where medics had treated the last crew operating the gun.
I've never seen a weapon like this, much less know how to operate it, Irk said, looking at the E-Web repeating blaster.
I've been trained on all types of infantry weapons, Odie replied. I'll fire the blaster. You monitor the power generator. She turned to the sergeant. When will we be relieved?
When you're relieved. And I don't have any idea when that will be, he answered.
He handed them each a ration packet.
Make them last. They're all we have left.
Sleep in shifts. One of you monitor the tactical net at all times. Comm check every 30 minutes. Don't miss one. Fire your weapon only when you have a target. You aren't down here to stop an assault, only to give us a warning if one comes and slow them down a little. Your communications call sign is Hope 5. The command post is Izzy 6. With that, he scuttled back up the communications trench. Despite her brave words, Odie hadn't trained exhaustively with the E-Web repeating blasters, and it took her several minutes of examination to refamiliarize herself with the system. This blaster should be connected to the other ones in the outpost by its built-in long-range secure comm link, she told Irk, pointing out each component as she mentioned it. That means if we come under attack, the targeting systems on the other blasters will automatically zero in to give a supporting fire and vice versa.
What'll this thing do? Irk asked, looking at the blaster.
He unfastened his equipment harness and tossed it in a corner.
Might want to keep that on, Irk, she warned. You never know when you might need something in there.
The embrasure had been drilled out of the rock in a way that allowed for plenty of overhead and flank protection. Forward observation was through narrow slits cut in the stone. Irk peered through one of the viewing ports. In the fading light, he could still clearly make out the blasted ground between Sector 5 and the dry riverbed, which was littered with destroyed droids.
We'll have to sleep with our headgear on, he remarked, since we'll need infrared capability once it gets dark.
Right. The blaster has an infrared target acquisition system. Before it gets too dark to see, I'll show you some more things about it.
The night passed quietly. The lines were probed in other sectors, resulting in intermittent blaster fire.
They divided the night into two-hour watches. Odie had taught Irk enough about their weapon that he could operate it by himself and deliver immediate fire if anything moved in their sector. Even watching through his night vision devices, Irk's eyes played tricks on him. Irregular mounds seemed to move if he stared at them long enough. He fought to stay awake. He sighed, shook himself, blinked. First light would be in a few minutes, then dawn.
Irk's heart fluttered. Something out there had moved. His palms on the aiming handle suddenly grew sweaty. He nudged Odie with his toe, and she snapped awake instantly.
Come on, come on, he whispered,
focusing the gun's optics, impatient for the action to begin. He could see as clearly as day through the sighting system. Then the entire field of vision through the firing port seemed to heave up and come at him.
Izzy 6! Izzy 6! Hope 5! Here they come!
Irk began firing into the mass of oncoming battle droids. He was aware of Odie at his side, monitoring the power surges as the blaster roared. A tiny voice inside his helmet asked,
Hope 5, Izzy 6 here. What is the enemy strength? Repeat, what is the enemy strength? Over.
Thousands of them! Irk shouted. Thousands!
Halcyon had finished his last war council with his captains, and they had departed to their separate commands. All was ready. Now the final waiting had begun. When Halcyon woke from a brief sleep, he sat in his quarters and wrote,
My dearest Skera and Valen.
This was the latest in a series of letters he had written to his wife and son to be delivered in case of his death, but hopefully in person once this expedition was over. He was writing them by hand to protect them from prying eyes and to keep safe, for now, the secret of his violation of the Jedi Oath. Finished, he folded and sealed the letter and added it to the packet he'd been keeping. A dozen letters in all.
the thought of his wife and son warmed him. He put the thought of his loved ones out of his mind. He had endured the separation from them for so long now that the pain had subsided into a dull throb deep in his vitals. It was no good to think of such things. He stretched. He'd go find Anakin, give him a last-minute pep talk, bolster both their spirits. Halcyon stood. There was only one place Anakin would be at this late hour. How's it going, Anakin? Startled, Anakin stood up in the cockpit of a starfighter, Azure Angel 2. Just making some last-minute adjustments. He hopped down from the fighter and wiped his hands on a rag. I'm ready. It was quiet in the docking bay. The other machines, shuttles mostly, had been secured against the impending action. The pair sat on some empty crates. Just a few hours and we'll be in it, Halcyon said. You have 10,000 troops under your command. How do you feel? Never felt better. Anakin slapped his knee. Master Halcyon, I've been meaning to ask you something. Halcyon looked closely at Anakin. Sure, what is it? Anakin hesitated, then blurted. Grudo told me about your run-in with Slake and, well, I thought I'd ask you. He shrugged. Why did you fight him that day? Not so much why did you fight him, but why did you fight him the way you did? I've wondered about that myself. Halcyon took a deep breath. I never wanted to go after Slake, you know. Others thought him a rebel at best, a pirate at worst. But I thought he was only doing what the Republic should have been doing all along. I had plans to go home to... He caught himself. To visit with friends, take a rest. But the Council appointed me to lead the judicial corvette they were sending after Slake, and I had to follow my orders. Do my duty. Do what I am sworn to do. We Jedi have no personal lives. No families like other people. His voice took on a tone of bitterness that surprised Anakin. So, Halcyon continued, when we got to the clearing where Slake's ship had landed, I knew he was not aboard, and I half suspected that Grudo standing there with his knives was part of some kind of diversionary scheme. He laughed harshly. But at that point, I just didn't care, he said with feeling. Anakin was taken aback by the emotion in the Jedi Master's voice. Anakin, can I trust you? Halcyon blurted then. Go on, Anakin said uncertainly. You know the reason we Jedi aren't supposed to have any emotional connections with other people, don't you? Anakin didn't answer. The question was rhetorical. It's because emotions cloud a Jedi's judgment, make it difficult for him to see his duty, to do the hard and difficult things he's sworn to do. Well, I failed the test. Najah Halcyon told Anakin about his wife and son. At first, Anakin couldn't speak, could only gape mutely at the man who had become a mentor. Halcyon chuckled and tapped Anakin under the jaw. Dropped so fast I thought you'd dislocated it, he said. He sighed. So there it is. You're the only one who knows. Are you going to tell the Jedi Council when we get back? Anakin didn't know what to say. No. He croaked, trying to control his voice. I suspect Yoda already knows or guesses. Not much gets by him. Then guilt and honesty overcame him. Besides, if I report you, you can retaliate by reporting me, he said all in a rush. And then he told Halcyon about his marriage to Padme. It was Najah Halcyon's turn to gape. When he could talk again, he said, Married? You? He shook his head wonderingly. And even Obi-Wan doesn't know? It has been difficult, Anakin admitted. Obi-Wan is my master and my friend. I hate lying to him. Halcyon just nodded. I know. We have gone against everything we have ever been taught, against what it means to be a Jedi. His voice trailed off. But it doesn't feel wrong, Anakin burst out. I mean, the dishonesty, yes, but not the love, not the caring. I feel no less a Jedi for my love of Padme. I, too, have struggled with that, Halcyon frowned. I wonder sometimes if Yoda does know about me, about us. But if that's the case, Then why did the Council pick me to lead this expedition? And why did they allow me to take you as my second in command, when they knew it would throw us together, two who share such a secret?
It's not because we were the only Jedi available. There were others at the temple, where they could have recalled some from other commands.
So why do it this way?
He looked at Anakin, and his shoulders straightened.
I'll tell you what I think. I think we're being given a chance to prove ourselves.
They as much as told me that. And I've come to think this assignment may be more of a trial, even than that.
Attack! Attack! Attack!
Tonith pounded the control panel.
Attack all along the line! Throw in as many battle droids as we need to break their defenses. We've already captured their forward bastion. Press on now! Press on!
Tonith had established his command post near the communication center on the plateau that overlooked the battlefield.
But Admiral...
Biwuf, the senior control technician, protested.
We've already lost upward of 100,000 droids in our previous attacks. I'm sorry, sir, but I seriously advise that our better course is to hold the line here until we're reinforced, and then overwhelm them with sheer numbers.
My dear Biwuf, assets that just sit in the bank only earn interest. You must invest to make a fortune.
Biwuf
began. Tonith cut him short.
Do you own these battle droids? Did you pay for them? You're acting as if they're your own personal property.
They're assets, my dear Biwuf. Assets in an active market.
And worthless unless invested wisely. Do you understand? We are being reinforced very shortly. When they arrive, I want this situation cleared up. Keep your infantry moving forward, closely supported by armor and artillery.
But, sir, our air assets were severely depleted in the battle with General Kamar's army. You know success is possible only if guaranteed by, well, full employment and integration of arms.
They don't have any air assets either!
Tonith clutched his hands together in frustration.
But, sir, our fleet...
Our fleet is useless. Our ships watch theirs and none dare engage the others, because if just a few are lost, the balance of power will swing to one side or the other, and none dare come to our aid here, because if any are taken out of orbit, the other side has an advantage.
But sir, we have ships blockading Sluis Van. They could lay mines and come here to dis...
We don't need them. Now get...
But, sir, for every one of them we kill, they knock out hundreds of our droids.
Biwuf protested, his face coloring.
Well, do the math. How many of the enemy are there? How many of our droids? Once we crack their defenses, their casualties will increase. And when they're at last routed, we'll wipe them out to the last fighter. Now, hop to it.
But, Admiral...
Biwuf drawled.
Blast it! Stop arguing with me!
At the end of his patience, Tonith signaled for two guard droids to approach.
Biwuf, see that corner over there? Sit down there.
You,
he said, turning to the droids. If he moves, kill him. White-faced, Biwuf trudged over to the corner and sat down. Tonith strode into the center of the control room.
You heard my orders. Carry them out. As of right now, I am taking personal control of all operations. Now press on! Press on! Never mind casualties. A little more effort and we'll crack their lines. Victory is almost ours.
Yeah! Get some! Get some! Come on, get some!
Irk yelled, firing indiscriminately through the bunker ports. He couldn't miss. Every shot disintegrated an infantry battle droid, but they kept on coming, rank after rank. Artillery lanced into them, but they just closed ranks and marched forward, firing at the muzzle flashes ahead of them,
laying down a withering field of fire as they advanced. Urk! We have to go! They're overrunning us! Odie screamed, but Urk just shook his head as if she were an annoying insect and kept on firing. He had never seen such a target-rich environment, and it drove him into a frenzy of wild destruction. She seized him by the shoulder and tried to pull him away from the blaster. He bounced her off with his hip and kept firing. She could see hundreds of droids surging around their bunker. They're flanking us! We've got to get out of here, she shouted. Scrabbling noises came from the bunker entrance. Odie snatched up her weapon and ran to the entrance just in time. Two droids came clanking down the short steps. She blasted them both. Urk never noticed. He yelled and cursed and fired and fired and fired. Tank droids! Odie shrieked. Tank droids! She could see two of them through the firing ports, lumbering along behind the infantry. Their two synchronized, forward-mounted blaster cannons had a 180-degree arc of fire and were used with deadly effect on troop concentrations, vehicles, and bunker complexes. The ground shook beneath the tank droids as they rolled toward the bunker. Odie could see the energy bolts of Slake's artillery being deflected off the behemoths. Cease fire, she yelled, beating her fists on his helmet as hard as she could. But he remained impervious to her warnings. He fired on the nearest tank droid. Immediately, its blaster module swiveled in the direction of the bunker. But before it could unleash a devastating bolt, the ground behind it erupted upward and flipped it forward to land on its back on top of the bunker. The countermine Slake had ordered dug beneath the Separatist mine had intersected its target and gone off just in time to break the tank droid charge. The last thing Odie heard before everything went dark was someone screaming. Slake looked at his staff officers.
Time is very short, he began. I shouldn't waste it on speeches. You all know what to do. We planned for a last stand from the beginning.
He paused.
Well, this is it, he told them.
Isabel, Alai, and Caudine had fallen, and the forward artillery had been withdrawn, along with the survivors of the overrun outposts, to a line centered on Judlai, behind the main command post. This was the plan that had been prepared even before Slake had landed on Presidlin. The enemy had temporarily halted their assault to straighten their line and bring up reinforcements.
That's the only break we're going to get, Slake said. We'll have time to form a last line of defense at Judlai. Withdraw your remaining forces there immediately.
He grabbed his blaster and turned away from the chart table. He stopped and turned back to his officers.
We all knew this might happen when we intervened. I'm sorry it did. I thought Coruscant would come to our aid. Maybe they're on their way. No matter. We're here. They aren't. When help does arrive, we'll have worn these nerfs down to the point where a single Jedi Padawan will be able to kick them to pieces.
He paused.
Surrender is no option for us. Not against this army. We all know that.
There was one more thing he had to say to his comrades.
If we've got to die, this is as good a place as any. I am proud to have had the privilege of leading you, of sharing your hardships and your friendship. And I am blessed to have people like you accompany me into the next world. Let's not go easy.
The dozen officers gathered around the chart table snapped to attention, raised their right fists, and shouted,
Hoorah!
Urk slowly became aware of an enormous pressure squeezing down on him. He opened his eyes but couldn't see anything. It was difficult to breathe with that weight pressing down on him. He moved, and the load shifted and groaned. It was Odie. She slipped off to one side, and the two or three large rock fragments that had been pinning her onto him rolled to the floor.
Oof.
He could breathe again.
Odie groaned. Thanks for getting us killed.
At first, Urk didn't know what she meant. Then,
oh yeah, I got a lot of them, didn't I?
He flexed his arms and legs and sat up.
Where you hurt? I have a big, feels like a big bruise on my hip. Otherwise,
she ran a hand through her hair and over her head.
think I'm all right.
She felt around her equipment belt and unhooked the glow rod fastened to it. She pressed the activation stud, and the bunker filled with blessed bright light. That was the good news. The bad news was that the blast had caved in the front of the bunker and loosened a huge slab of rock in the ceiling that had broken into two fragments when it fell, imprisoning the pair inside a space that tapered like a rocky tent to about 2 meters high and 3 meters wide at the floor.
Well, we're not squashed. We have air, and we're secure and comfortable in this rocky bower,
Urk commented wryly. Seems we're spending a lot of time underground together recently.
Yeah, that's the only way I can manage to find some time alone with you.
She looked around the confined space.
We're going to die in here, aren't we?
Sure looks like it.
With a sigh, he reached down and took her hand.
We'll die of thirst before we starve, won't we? To think of all we came through to end it like this.
She couldn't keep the bitter taste of despair out of her voice. She turned the glow rod off to preserve its power. Hours passed in the darkness. They whiled away the time, reminiscing about better times, friends and relatives, music they liked, their homes, fine meals they'd eaten. Urk was the more experienced in the world through his travels, and he was a good raconteur. He made Odie laugh with his wild tales. They ate the remainder of the small allotment of rations the sergeant had given them when he dropped them at the bunker. At least they each still had a full canteen of water. Daylight was fading fast now. With the exception of just a few weapons, no more than a battery, Slake's heavy artillery pieces had all been knocked out. His aircraft had all long ago been destroyed. He didn't even have a shuttlecraft to get back up to what was left of his fleet in orbit. Not that anybody was thinking of going anywhere. The enemy's troops had paused after taking over the forward positions in Slake's defensive line, ostensibly to consolidate their position and shorten their lines for the final attack and bring up reinforcements for the final overwhelming push. It could be only minutes away now. That was the only break Slake had been given since the assault began. It would give him the time he needed to prepare for a last stand. Slake sat with his eyes glued to the optics that gave him a 360-degree surveillance of the terrain in front of Judlai.
Sir, here are our dispositions.
A staff officer handed him a display, and he glanced at it quickly.
Tell our commanders to hold their positions at all costs, but tell them I give the ranking soldier in each unit permission to disperse before being overrun. If there's any chance for our troops to scatter and escape into the desert, they can try it. Make that clear.
The officer saluted and turned to the communications console. A long, rolling artillery barrage began to envelop their positions, shaking the ground around them.
When that stops, they'll be coming, Slake said to his command staff. When they overrun us, anyone who wants to try can attempt a breakout. No way am I going to stay here and fry.
An enormous, ripping, tearing roar engulfed them, distant and muted at first, but rising quickly to a deafening crescendo so profound it made their guts vibrate. It was clearly coming from somewhere behind them. Slake pounded a fist into his forehead. Nobody had any doubt what it meant. It was their death knell.
He's been reinforced, Slake said. Grab your weapons and equipment.
Lay on!
An officer shouted as the staff scrambled for the bunker exit.
At least we'll die fighting!
Slake raised a blaster rifle over his head.
Follow me!
He ordered. Anakin paced the bridge of the Nilayan, clenching and unclenching his fists as he observed the battle cruisers deploy into attack formation.
I should be out there with them, he muttered.
No, you belong here, Grudo answered. Please sit. You're making the crew nervous.
You'll have action soon enough, Luha replied. Increase magnification, he ordered his navigator. Immediately, the ranger came into sharp focus on the view screens. Luhar was a distinguished-looking officer, middle-aged, Anakin estimated, with a full head of silver-gray hair. Anakin had admired the man's calm professionalism from the moment he had first stepped onto the Nilayan's bridge. The enemy commander had ordered his ships into a vast box-like formation in orbit, above the hemisphere where the Intergalactic Communication Center was located.
"We'll have to break that square to get through to planetfall," Anakin observed.
Luhar nodded.
"It's a strong defensive formation, sir. But we'll break it by lining up in a column three ships abreast and attacking at speed. Have you ever been in a battle fleet engaged against an enemy, sir?"
Anakin nodded.
"Yes, but not from the bridge. Not watching everything unfold. I got this..."
He tapped his prosthesis.
"In individual combat."
"Ah, there's Slake's remaining vessels."
Captain Luhar sat forward in the couch.
"They see what we're doing, and they're forming up to attack the port side of that square. You watch. We'll crack that square in no time."
"Blasted. I wish we had communications with those ships."
"If that jamming platform is anywhere in orbit, sir, we'll get it,"
the fire control officer said, looking back over his shoulder from the console where he sat.
A brilliant flash lit up the viewing consoles.
"All right, there they go. The Ranger just got off the first salvo," Captain Luhar said calmly.
"Torpedoes, I do believe. Now we'll see how well they work.
Mark the time. All stations report."
He listened carefully as each of the ship's stations reported they were ready for battle.
"Commander, it's up to you now.
As soon as you're sure the enemy's fully engaged, you may send in the transports."
Anakin knew what he had to do.
"Prepare my landing craft," he ordered.
As soon as the transports were on the way, he would follow.
"Landing craft prepared," the bosun replied immediately. "All stand by," Captain Luhar ordered. "Commander, we wait on your command."
"Not yet. Not yet. Give me more magnification on the Ranger, please."
Najah Halcyon stood on the bridge of the Ranger, the slightest shadow of a smile on his lips. He was minutes, seconds away from embarking on the most important mission of his life, but calm and confident in himself and the people around him. The Ranger's energy screens were up. Her crew were at their battle stations. They were ready to engage the enemy at last.
"Commander, we are 2 minutes from initial point," the Ranger's commander, Captain Queeg, announced.
"Sir, General Halcyon." It was the fleet intelligence officer. "Please look on your screen. That bright blip at the center of the enemy's defensive formation is the jamming platform they've been using to cut us off from Coruscant."
Halcyon broke into a big grin.
"Are you sure, Intel?"
"Positive, sir. That's her. She looks like a droid control ship, sir. The Separatists can afford technology we can't. Wish we had their resources."
"Okay, Intel, good work. Very good work. Captain, you have the target for your first salvo."
"Copy, sir."
"Gunnery officer, mark that target for proton torpedo salvo. Deactivate the homing system. Use line-of-sight guidance system. I want these babies dead on."
The Ranger carried a battery of two MG-1A proton torpedo tubes. They were new weapons, auxiliary to the ship's batteries of laser cannons, not yet tested in battle, but potentially devastating, with a range of 3,000 kilometers, a velocity of 20,000 kilometers per hour.
"Fire when ready, Captain," Halcyon commanded.
He strapped himself into the gravity couch beside Queeg and waited.
"Fire control," the captain said. "On my mark."
"IP reach, sir," the navigator said.
"Fire!"
"Watch, officer. Mark in the log the time the first salvo fired."
He turned to Halcyon.
"General, we are engaging the enemy."
A bright flash filled the view screens.
"We got him! We got him!"
the navigation officer shouted. Immediately, the communications consoles blinked into life, and the bridge was filled with a cacophony of voices from the other ships in the fleet.
"Get some control there,"
Queeg told the communications officer, who immediately got busy reestablishing the ship's command and control net.
"Tell the fleet to follow me and execute the attack plan."
He turned to Halcyon.
"This is all we needed to give us the edge over the enemy. Captain, can you try to establish contact with Slake's forces? Also, set me up with a line to Coruscant. I want to report that we have opened contact with the enemy.
First salvo to us.
Second to them."
Captain Queeg pointed to a screen. A nasty red glow began to blossom on a heavy cruiser on the extreme starboard flank of the attack formation. It grew quickly. Then a bright flash consumed the ship.
He shook his head sadly. That was the Bynium, Lench's ship. But now bright flashes began to appear all over the enemy ships as Halcyon's fleet closed in. The Ranger lurched suddenly to port.
Everyone stand fast. Damage reports.
The ship stations reported no significant damage.
Near hit, Queek said with a sigh. They're ranging in on us, so hold on, everyone. Give me an external view of our hull, Queek commanded.
When he switched to the port side, he shouted,
No, wait. That was no near hit. We're being boarded.
A huge explosion suddenly rocked the Ranger.
Tell the other ships to continue the attack,
Halcyon shouted as he unstrapped himself from his gravity couch.
What's our status, Captain?
We've been breached somewhere aft. There's a small vessel fastened onto our stern. They're coming in through a breach back there.
There was no report from the propulsion unit.
Captain,
the executive officer reported.
Not all the airlock doors are working. I'd like to go back and inspect the damage, sir.
Go to it.
I'm going with him,
Halcyon said.
You two.
He gestured at the pair of guards standing beside the aft hatch.
Unsling your weapons and follow me.
He pulled his lightsaber from his belt. The guards did as they were told.
General, what are you doing?
Queeg asked.
I'm taking these guards and your executive officer and going aft, Captain. If we have boarders on us, we're going to repel them.
The Ranger's been hit,
Anakin shouted. Everyone on the bridge started.
I believe you're right.
Captain Luhar leaned forward. Then he looked at Anakin.
Commander, that means...
Sir, message from the Ranger. She reports her propulsion unit is damaged and they've been boarded. General Halcyon directs Commander Skywalker to assume command of the fleet and to commence deploying the landing force.
Look there!
Another crew member shouted.
She is being boarded!
On the screens, they could just make out a dim shape attached to the Ranger's stern.
They're skirmisher ships, the captain announced.
The enemy commander's put them out in advance of his position to ambush us.
Blasted things remained cloaked until they attacked. Calm, warn the rest of the fleet.
Anakin struggled to control his emotions. He was in charge now, and he would be every bit the commanding officer.
Captain, please give the order to land the transports.
Inform General Halcyon's deputy division commander that he is now in command of his division, and until further notice, I shall be field commander in place of General Halcyon. He turned to the Rodian. Grudo, our troopers are ready for battle. Let us join them. There was vast confusion after the Ranger's control room.
Commander,
a chief petty officer exclaimed, running up to the ship's executive officer.
Good to see you, sir. They're in the propulsion unit. I assume the crew there is all dead.
We've sealed the airlock doors just forward of the propulsion room, but they're cutting through, and we have some doors in the forward compartments that won't seal. Better suit up.
General, follow me.
The exec led them into an equipment compartment that was full of crew getting into low-gravity gear.
If we're going to have a fight inside the ship, sir, we can't rely on hull integrity.
Quickly, quickly!
Several crew members, already suited, rushed up to help Halcyon into his own gear.
Have you issued weapons yet?
Halcyon asked.
Taking care of that, sir, an ensign replied.
Good. What is your job, ensign?
I'm a structural engineer, sir.
You know the ship then, don't you?
Yes, sir.
Commander, I'll go forward with the two guards and this ensign, assess the threat, and hold them up. I want you to organize the crew and form them into an attack force to follow me. Clear?
Clear, sir.
Suddenly, the atmosphere rushed out of the Ranger's aft compartments with a roar so violent it nearly knocked them off their feet. Just as suddenly, the wind and roar ended in the deep, still silence of airless space. Halcyon had counted 20 crew on the bridge and 50 more behind them who'd been suiting up. That meant 100 crew members were unaccounted for, dead if they hadn't been killed in the attack or failed to don their zero-atmosphere suits in time.
Ensign, I'm only familiar with certain parts of the ship. I need you to guide us to the stern. Guards, are you ready?
Yes,
one responded. The other added somberly,
"The rest of our detachment is back there somewhere. Yeah, we're ready."
Halcyon held up his lightsaber and activated it.
"I'll lead the way. Ensign, you stay close behind me. Guards, ready your weapons and bring up the rear. Don't fire unless you have a clear target. And whatever you do, don't shoot me." "I'd never shoot a Jedi, sir. Don't know about a general, though. When we get through this, I'll have both of you assigned to my personal staff." "We don't deserve a reward like that, sir,"
the one protested. Halcyon laughed.
"That's no reward. After a while, you'll wonder what you did to deserve such punishment. Come on, stay alert."
They passed the ship's medbay.
"Ensign, are we going the right way? By the way, what is your name?" "Yes, sir, right way. My name, sir, is D'Jock." "Guards, what do I call you?"
"I'm Corporal Raider, sir."
"I'm Private Vic, sir."
"Call me General, and no more jokes from here on out."
They came upon the battle droids just as three of them entered the crew's compartment. Halcyon didn't hesitate. His lightsaber flashed in a whirl of energy, easily deflecting the bolt from the droids' laser rifles. He slashed into them, 1, 2, 3, and the machines disintegrated before his companions could point their blasters at the intruders. Halcyon stood flat against the bulkhead, and, as the next three battle droids came through the hatch, disposed of them in turn. In 6 seconds, he had turned the compartment into a junkyard.
"Blast through that hatch,"
Halcyon ordered.
"Exec, we've got them stopped. Bring up the rest of the force."
The two guards advanced using fire and maneuver, one directing bolt after bolt of energy through the open hatch, while the other rushed to the left to continue delivering fire when his companion broke to the right and took cover up against the bulkhead. Halcyon went through the hatch. The compartment was full of battle droids, all of which opened fire at the same time. Halcyon parried the blaster bolts with his lightsaber. Most of the bolts arced back onto the droids that had fired them. Halcyon pressed forward. The two guards followed him. In seconds, the repair shop was a shambles, but the droids in it were all destroyed. Halcyon's suit was nearly melted through in places from near hits. One of the guards had sustained a bad burn on his thigh, but the self-sealing material in his suit had saved his air supply.
"We had them on the run!"
Ensign D'Jock shouted.
"Yes, we pushed them back. Come on, let's clear out the next compartment."
Halcyon started forward.
"Hold it!"
The ship's exec stepped through from the crew compartment, followed by 20 heavily armed men.
"You don't look so good, sir. Your suit sustained some damage. General, you'd better get back up to the bridge and get out of that suit before it fails. Take these others with you. We know what to do. We'll finish what you started."
Supporting the wounded guard between them, the trio staggered back up to the bridge. Within a few minutes, the ship's exec and his team had cleared the boarding party. The crew sustained no further casualties. Damage control was already working on restoring hull integrity. An atmosphere was being restored in some of the forward compartments, but the Ranger was out of the battle.
"I'm very sorry about your ship and her crew, Captain,"
Halcyon said.
"They were good troops, and she's a good ship, sir. But I've already made arrangements to transfer to another vessel. We'll scuttle her. General, if it hadn't been for you, we'd all be dead now."
Queeg held out his hand, and they shook.
"Take good care of those two guards, Captain. When I get to the ground, I want them assigned to my staff."
Using ground-skimming navigation, Anakin expertly guided the troop landing craft, letting it roar along at a scant 10 meters above the ground. Greedo sat strapped into the co-pilot seat, gripping the armrests, as Anakin delicately shifted the steering yoke just enough to clear the top of a hill that flashed beneath them.
"Just missed that one, Greedo. Check our troopers, would you?"
He was delighted to be flying the transport, and perversely amused that at last he'd found something that made the Rodian soldier nervous.
"The troopers are doing well. Can you slow down a bit, or do you enjoy giving me heart failure?"
Behind them, at somewhat higher altitudes, the sky was dark with other craft, each carrying 50 combat-loaded soldiers. The combat engineers had already landed, and thousands of labor droids were preparing defensive positions for the infantry. Once Anakin's force had landed and reinforced the engineers, the rest of the army would touch down in huge transport ships.
"Relax, Gerudo. I've been flying like this since I was a boy," Anakin shouted.
"Get ready!" Anakin warned the hundreds of pilots following him. "We are 0-3 from touchdown. I'll see you on the ground." He turned to Gerudo. "I just hope some of Slake's army has survived."
The landing on Presetlin was to proceed in four waves. First, the combat engineers, supported by infantry and other arms to prepare defensive positions. Then Anakin with his division, followed by Halcyon's division. Each division was assigned its own landing zone, in an area thought to be far enough away from where the enemy force was entrenched, to afford the troops ample opportunity to land, deploy, and take defensive positions before they could be attacked. Once the entire force was on the ground, with or without whatever might remain of Slake's army, they would commence operations against the enemy.
A withdrawal in the face of the enemy is one of the most difficult tactical maneuvers there is. You are the commander on the scene, and the choice of tactics is yours. But can you do such a thing?
Count Dooku's image shifted before Por's Tarnith's eyes.
Droids do not panic, Count Dooku, and the enemy has not yet consolidated his forces. If I withdraw now to the plateau, I can do it essentially without interference. That will give me the advantage of occupying the high ground, as well as tightening my grip on the communications facility. If I stay where I am now, their combined force will overwhelm me. Of course, if I was reinforced...
You shall be reinforced when the forces are available. Has any of your fleet survived?
Yes. Those ships have fled to join the fleet at Sluis Van. I will not commit them until I am reinforced. Otherwise, they would be severely outnumbered and destroyed. The droid control ship that was blocking communications from here was destroyed also. They now have open contact with Coruscant.
No matter. That investment worked well for as long as we needed it. We do not need it anymore.
Prisoners tell me I am facing a Zoz Rider Slake. What can you tell me about him? He has conducted a brilliant defense up to this point. Nevertheless, I was on the verge of wiping him out when the relief force from Coruscant arrived.
Zoz Rider Slake is an extraordinary man. We could use one like him.
Count Dooku went on to recite Slake's recent history.
A renegade? I'm not surprised, sir. The man's troops fight like pirates with their backs to the wall.
I'll tell you something else. The force now opposing you is led by a Jedi Master, Najar Halcyon, and a young Padawan named Anakin Skywalker.
Dooku went on to tell Tarnith something about the history of the two Jedi.
Najar Halcyon, you will find, is careful and predictable. But beware the young Jedi. He is volatile. This is both a danger to you and a possible weakness you can exploit.
There is one more matter, Count. Raja Momon. I want to use her for propaganda.
Count Dooku's eyes narrowed to tiny slits as he steepled his fingers.
What do you propose?
Sir, I will put her on a holonet transceiver transmission to the Republic Senate.
A live hookup. She will read a prepared statement to them. To wit, remove your troops from Presetlin, or Admiral Tarnith will kill us. They'll never believe you.
Not all of them, no. But the Senate is a squabbling, democratic body. The broadcast will at least instill doubt into their deliberations.
Before I let myself be defeated, I will not only kill them, I will destroy the Intergalactic Communications Center. I've already made preparations to do exactly that.
But don't forget this. Raja Momin is respected and well-known on Alderaan as well as on Coruscant. She's a handsome matron, too. An icon. Everyone's mother. To see her begging for her life, for the lives of her workers, will definitely let them know how serious I am.
I approve your propaganda effort and your defensive plan. Put them into effect. Do not contact me again. I will contact you.
The screen went dead.
Sir, they're withdrawing! The droid army is withdrawing!
An astonished officer shouted at Slake. Slake grinned broadly.
Yes, Lieutenant. And take a look at those ships. They're ours. Talk about being saved in the nick of time.
Certainly the ships were those of the Republic, for each clearly displayed the distinctive black-on-white logo of the 8-spoked wheel within a circle.
I don't think I've ever seen a more beautiful sight.
Slake clapped the officer on his shoulder.
Tell our people to cover the droid retreat. I'm going out to see who's in charge.
Slith Scale moved defensively to protect Raja when Tonith entered the room where they were being held prisoner.
Remove him, Tonith told the droid guards. But keep him just outside the door. I may have some use for him in a few moments.
The droids unceremoniously grabbed the sluicy and dragged him, protesting, out of the room.
What do you want?
Raja gritted.
Are you being treated well?
Tonith smiled and took a seat opposite Raja. Are we not looking after your welfare, madam?
If you can call murder, unprovoked warfare, beastly...
Shut up, woman!
Tonith's voice cracked like a whip.
Listen to me very carefully. I'm going to put you on a holonet transmission to the Republic Senate on Coruscant. You will read a prepared statement. If you do not agree to this proposal, or if you try any tricks while reading the statement, I will kill your sluicy friend. Here, read.
He handed her a short script.
Read it aloud.
Raja glanced at the short paragraph and smiled.
I knew they would come, she whispered. You're in trouble, aren't you?
Shut up, you arrogant.
Tonith visibly drew in his anger.
Read the statement. Read it back to me now.
Slowly, Raja read the statement.
I am Raja Momin, director of the Presidlin Intergalactic Communications Center. My staff and I are being held prisoner by an armed separatist force. The commander of that force demands that you order the troops now opposing him to withdraw from Presidlin immediately. For every hour you delay issuing that order, one of my staff will be executed, ending with me. I beg you, for the sake of my people, to comply immediately.
Add a little more emotion toward the end. Otherwise, very good. Now we shall proceed to the communications room.
You'll never kill all of us. You need us as hostages. As long as we're alive, the Republic forces won't mount a massive attack on the center, and you hope you can delay that until you're reinforced.
Tonith sighed and snapped his fingers. A droid entered the room.
Make ready to slice off her left ear, he ordered.
The droid seized Raja with one hand and deftly gripped her left ear in strong mechanical fingers. Those fingers squeezed hard, and Raja fought not to scream.
Now get her to her feet, he commanded the droid.
We don't want to keep the Senate waiting.
They pushed Raja down the corridors to the control room. A hologram pod had been set up in the main control room of the communications center, and a chair placed in front of the pod for Raja to sit in. She was unceremoniously thrust into it by the droid.
Remember, my dear, Tonith sneered. If you try to get smart with me during the transmission, I'll have that ear removed.
He nodded to a technician at the controls. Raja studied the script.
When will you begin the executions?
She asked.
Begin.
the technician said. Raja looked calmly into the middle distance.
I am Raja Momin, director of the Intergalactic Communication Center on Presidlin, she began, her voice steady and well modulated. My staff and I, she continued, are being held prisoner by an armed separatist force. The commander of that force demands you order the troops now opposing him to withdraw from Priestlin immediately. For every hour you delay issuing that order, one of my staff will be executed, ending with me. She paused for a full 3 seconds. The technician glanced nervously at Toneth, who, smiling, held up a hand indicating he should let Raja finish her statement.
I beg you, for the sake of my people.
Attack! 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 She screamed.
The flag of the Republic wrapped around his neck, Zoe's rider Slake leapt gracefully over the ramparts the labor droids were erecting and looked around. His heart raced. For almost as far as he could see, the sky was full of landing craft. Others, already landed in vast clouds of dust and sand, were disgorging squads of armored troopers. An older human male with brown mustaches and brilliant blue eyes looked up as Slake approached and nodded to his companions, who appeared to be studying maps or plans. Slake stopped before the older man, came to attention, and saluted him smartly.
Captain Zoe's rider Slake, commanding the force opposing the separatist invaders of Presidlin, sir. I hereby offer my full assistance in your campaign to liberate this world.
The older man, an embarrassed expression on his face, slowly returned Slake's salute and said,
Well, I'm here to tell you.
He gestured at a Jedi standing next to a Rodian.
Who is that?
Slake asked, startled. Anakin stepped into full view. Jedi Anakin Skywalker, Captain Slake. I'm in command of the landing force.
The Republic's so low on soldiers, they're robbing the cradle now, eh?
Slake slammed a fist into his thigh.
What was your name again, Jedi General?
Anakin Skywalker, sir. Anakin bowed slightly at the waist. And it's Commander, not General. Sir, I have heard a lot about you and am honored.
Look, Jedi Commander Anakin Skywalker, I have only about 2,000 soldiers left of all those who landed here with me. We fought them hard and upset their plans. But you're honored? Don't talk to me of honor, Jedi. We're nothing but blood, guts, and sweat here. And,
he shook his head as he looked over the landing force,
if there's anything more useless in this galaxy than a Jedi's brain, it's a clone trooper. They're one step above a droid. In fact, I'd prefer droids over these ugly clones anytime. You can't tell clones apart, and they all have the same personality.
Now see here, the older officer protested. We've heard quite enough from you, Slake. I'm here to tell you.
Who is this, since he's not the general?
Slake asked Anakin. My quartermaster, Major Mess Bollinger. Slake roared with laughter and pointed a finger at Bollinger.
You mean I was dumb enough to try to report to a blasted box kicker? Oh, that's rich.
Anakin held up a hand. Captain Slake, right now I'm busy landing my troops. We're going to establish a defensive position as soon as General Halcyon joins us. Slake groaned and slapped his forehead.
Oh, Halcyon, did you say? Najah Halcyon? He's commanding this fleet?
Yes, sir. As soon as he joins us, Slake laughed.
Why is this happening to me?
Captain, I know you and General Halcyon had some differences once.
Oh, you do you, young beardless Jedi?
Slake laughed louder.
I never met the man, he scowled. I was too busy stealing his ship. You see that slight rise over there? That's my command post. When General Halcyon gets here, you and him come on over and we'll talk.
With that, he spun on his heel and stomped off. Supreme Chancellor Palpatine's expression did not change as he watched the short transmission from Presidlin.
Reja Momin is from Alderaan, isn't she? He asked Armand Isert, who had been enjoying drinks with the Chancellor, when Lieutenant Jen Bean, the Senatorial Communication Center watch officer, delivered the transmission.
I believe so, sir.
Isert also had watched Reja Momin's statement without evident emotion.
Shall we call an emergency session of the Senate?
To view this? I don't think so. What good would it do? The hostages? They won't kill them. This is a bluff, and a blackmail bluff at that. Lieutenant Jen Bean, he said, turning to the watch officer who had brought Momin's statement directly from the communications center.
Have you showed this to anyone else?
No, sir.
Good.
Palpatine paused.
Do you know Momin personally?
He asked then.
No, sir, not personally. I know her by reputation. She is one of the most highly respected persons in our profession.
I understand. I will keep this with me until I decide what to do.
Until then, you are to treat this as absolutely top secret. Is that understood? Have your log entry show only that a transmission came in from Presidlin. Nothing more.
After Jen Bean left, Isert turned to Palpatine and asked,
Do you really think he'll keep this to himself?
No. Armand, where emotion rules, the wise man will hedge his bets every time. Did you see the lieutenant's expression as we watched the transmission? You know he'd seen that thing several times before he brought it to me. That woman, Reja Momin, she's an icon. She looks like the ideal mother. Only old hard cases like us can resist an appeal like that to our basic instincts. Lieutenant Jen Bean was incensed, and the farther he got from Chancellor Palpatine's residence, the angrier he became. They had just sat there watching that transmission without even a change of expression. How could those politicians have taken this so lightly? Didn't individuals count anymore in this republic? Wasn't the republic the guarantor of the freedom and lives of each of its citizens? Surely nobody would expect Palpatine to call off the relief expedition. But shouldn't he have shared this information with the commanders? Demanded a plan to free the hostages? Although it was not clear to Jen Bean just what Chancellor Palpatine or anyone else could do about Momin's situation, he was incensed that the Chancellor proposed to do nothing at the moment. In just a few minutes, one of the technicians on Presidlin would be murdered. Maybe it had already happened. He shuddered at the thought of further transmission showing people he knew lying dead in the Presidlin Intergalactic Communications Center. Anakin smiled as Halcyon stepped into his command post. They shook hands warmly.
You've done an excellent job landing and deploying the army, Halcyon told him. What's happening?
He nodded toward the high ground. Briefly, Anakin filled him in on the tactical situation. Our landing went off unopposed. The enemy is withdrawing to the plateau, and we haven't been able to take advantage of the movement because we weren't fully deployed when it began. Now they occupy the high ground, and I'm sure they're fortified up there, using the communications center and its staff as hostages to prevent us from mounting a full-scale attack. It's going to be hard to dislodge them. Halcyon nodded. That's why we've got to be flexible. I've got a couple of ideas. Have you met Slake yet? Anakin smiled.
Yes.
He wants us to visit him in his command post as soon as you're ready. Their courses inexorably set. The vast armada sped through the cold, eternally dark reaches of space. Aboard each ship, systems pulsed with energy, as its computers, carefully attended by an army of perfectly functioning droids, kept it on its predetermined course. Weapon systems that could destroy whole fleets were at the ready. These were dead machines, almost as cold inside as the vacuum of space outside their hulls, kept just warm enough to prevent metals and plastics from weakening and lubricants from freezing. They had no names, only numbers and nomenclatures. Nowhere except on the flagship, a monstrous killing machine in its own right, was there to be heard the voice of a single living being. No laughter, no cursing, no complaining, no life.
just the muted whispering of machinery. And on the flagship itself, grim-faced beings went about their duties with the calm born of an ingrained military discipline as rigorous as the technology that controlled the droid infantry and the transport ships following the battlecruisers. In those transports, silence pervaded the compartments, crammed with hundreds of thousands of battle droids, folded motionless in their racks, waiting for the signal that would turn them into dispassionate, efficient, killing machines. This fleet was the long-awaited separatist reinforcements, the armored fist reaching out to smash the world known as Presidlin.
Welcome to my humble and last remaining strong point, Slake boomed in greeting as he bounded to his feet. His officers stood around silently, staring at the two Jedi and their three companions. I presume, sir, that you are the... Slake hesitated for just a brief instant, but that hesitation spoke volumes to Najah Halcyon. Inestimable General Halcyon? He extended his hand.
The same, Captain, Halcyon answered. They shook. As they made physical contact, each looked into the other's eyes. Two wary rivals sizing each other up.
What do you have that I can steal from you this time? Slake asked,
a wry, challenging expression on his face. Halcyon ignored the question. This is my deputy, Commander Skywalker.
We've met. Slake bowed slightly. And those two strapping lads over there? He asked,
indicating the two guards Halcyon had brought along.
Corporal Raiders and Private Vic, my confidential advisors on military affairs.
Halcyon answered.
Slake nodded. It's a smart commander who listens to the voices from the ranks. I see you've dragged him along, too.
Slake sneered, nodding at Grudo.
Grudo goes where I go. That's the way it's going to be. Anakin answered at once.
Can we talk in private?
Halcyon nodded at the officer standing about.
No. Whatever we have to say, my officers can hear. I don't keep vital information from my troops.
Slake motioned to a sergeant standing nearby to clear off a field table.
Take your seats and I'll tell you a thing or two about the battle we fought here.
Halcyon and Anakin joined Slake at the table.
I have devised several maneuvers that I'm confident, with the timely arrival of your troops, I can use to successfully assault the enemy's positions on the plateau. Please observe the schematic of the terrain on that screen. What I propose we do is...
Excuse me, Captain, Halcyon interrupted. I'm very anxious to hear your battle plan, but first there's something we've got to get straight.
Slake pretended surprise.
Please proceed, Najah. You don't mind if I call you Najah, do you?
He asked, his voice dripping with sarcasm.
You can call me what you like, as long as you mean sir. I was sent here by the Senate to take command of this operation, and take command I will. You will place your remaining troops under me. While I value your opinion and look forward to hearing your advice, I'll make the final decisions on any plans for the employment of this army. Is that clear?
Slake leaned back in his chair and puffed at his cheeks.
Well... That's a mighty big speech from a guy,
he leaned forward across the table,
who can't even keep his pocket from being picked.
He grinned evilly.
Captain,
I have the authority of the Senate. Tell them to kiss my sweet toes,
Slake retorted.
I have a fleet in orbit, and I have an army of fresh troops.
Blasted faceless clones, Slake spat. Look around you. This is an army. These are soldiers, battle-hardened veterans who have withstood the worst the enemy has thrown at them and still have fight in them. You think your clones can match spirit like that? Ha!
He placed his hands behind his head.
And I might add, you took your sweet time getting here.
Captain, Anakin leaned forward so he could speak confidentially.
You would never have survived that final attack. I'd say you owe us, not the other way around.
Oh, the nursery speaks,
Slake roared.
General Halcyon, maybe you'd like your Pluriod Bodkin back. I'll trade her for your own flagship.
Now that I've bloodied the enemy's nose, I think I need a vessel fitting a man of my considerable skill. Don't you agree?
My flagship was scuttled, and most of her crew killed when we broke the cordon and restored communications, Captain. Halcyon answered, his voice flat and hard.
Yes? And while you were taking your time getting here, we were fighting, and I lost thousands of good troops. Do you think any of us care in the least about your flagship's crew?
Slake's face had flushed with anger.
We didn't have the force to help us either. I suppose you called on it to extricate yourself?
He sneered. Yes. And this. With one smooth motion made so fast, nobody, not even Anakin, saw it coming. Halcyon drew his lightsaber and activated it. The onlookers gasped at the sight of the brilliant blade of pure energy. Slake's eyes narrowed and his body tensed, but he didn't move or even show any degree of surprise.
Any more tricks?
Halcyon deactivated the lightsaber and hooked it back onto his belt.
I rather like these things,
he said pleasantly, patting the weapon affectionately. They come in handy when you're outnumbered 100-1.
You were saying?
He smiled engagingly.
Slake laughed. I have to admit, I'm coming to admire your style.
At that point, Anakin lost his patience with the verbal sparring. We don't have much time to get organized. Let's get on with our strategy session. What happened on Bip Fash was then. This is now. Both Halcyon and Slake stared at him. Halcyon cleared his throat.
He's right, Slake. We've got to cooperate.
This must be something important. Excuse me, please. It was the fleet communications officer.
Sir, I have just received the most interesting transmission from the Senatorial Communications Center on Coruscant. I believe you must see it at once, sir.
Can you tell me what it's about?
Halcyon asked. The communications officer paused.
General, I think you should see it and, well, you'll see what I mean.
They reached the holonet transceiver just in time to see Raja Moman's image flash on the monitor.
I am Raja Moman, director of the Intergalactic Communications Center on Presidlin. My staff and I are being held prisoner by an armed separatist force. The commander of that force demands you order the troops now opposing him to withdraw from Presidlin immediately. For every hour you delay issuing that order, one of my staff will be executed, ending with me. I beg you, for the sake of my people. Attack! Attack! Attack!
The last attack echoed through the totally silent room.
Gutsy woman, Halcyon said with admiration.
No kidding, Slake agreed. So she's the one we came here to rescue.
Anakin couldn't utter a word. There was something else about that woman. Halcyon looked at his second in command.
Anakin?
Anakin stood with his fists clenched, the muscles in his jaw working. The monitor was blank now, but he continued to glare at it, as if Moman's image was still there.
Anakin, Halcyon asked.
Someone behind them was cursing in the most foul terms. Someone else said something softly, and the curses stopped.
Anakin.
Halcyon clamped a hand on Anakin's shoulder and shook it.
What?
Anakin blinked, as though returning from someplace different.
Anakin, it's over.
Yes. It's just... Anakin shook his head again and took a breath. That woman, she reminds me of... Well, I don't know. Slake stood.
Listen up, everyone.
He announced in a voice so loud several officers started.
Listen up, he repeated in a softer tone. If our comrades who died here fighting these separatists could see what that woman has done, they would know.
His voice cracked.
They would know. Their lives were not sacrificed in vain.
He paused and took a breath.
If we ever needed a cause to keep us going, we have it now.
He walked over to Halcyon and offered him his hand, then extended it to Anakin
and shook warmly.
I put myself and what's left of my army completely at your disposal. What are my orders?
The strategy session that started at Strongpoint Judli continued for hours. Eventually, they moved to Halcyon's command post, which was bigger, better equipped, and offered refreshments that Slake's depleted supplies could not afford. After several hours, it finally got down to two basic approaches.
"Frontal assaults are out of the question," Slake roared. "You ought to know that an attacking force incurs casualties at a rate of at least 3-1 against the fortified position. That's what he's hoping for, so he can cut us down to size."
I know, Halcyon replied. "I'm just advising a feint at his center, while a strong force swings around one of his flanks. Grab him in the center of his line, hold him fast, make him think that's our main axis of attack, and hit him around the flank and come down on his rear."
"How about a vertical envelopment?" Anakin suggested. "We have the transports. We could land a force in his rear and attack from there, while our main force advances on the center of his line."
Slake cocked an eyebrow.
"What do you think?"
he asked Halcyon.
"I don't know," the Jedi Master replied cautiously. "What's his anti-aircraft capability?"
"We've made an assessment," his intelligence officer responded. "We sent remotely piloted vehicles over his lines an hour ago in anticipation of this question, sir. We sent several, none came back. But they transmitted enough information for us to determine that his anti-air defenses are particularly dense. We estimate at least 35% casualties just going in, sir, and even higher casualties coming back out."
"Prohibitive," Slake said softly. "I'm sorry, Anakin. Vertical envelopment won't work. I think the only viable tactic is to swing around one of his flanks."
Which had been Halcyon's opinion from the beginning.
"Then we'll follow the plan to attack the center simultaneously with a strong force swinging around his flank," Halcyon said. "But first, we've got to know how strong his positions are."
"I have just the man," Slake said. "Omen, front and center. Sergeant Lalox is one of the best recon men in the business."
The sergeant approached the officers and came to attention. Halcyon stood and shook his hand.
"It's nearly midnight, Sergeant Lalox. Can you complete a reconnaissance of the enemy line by dawn?"
"I can't do the whole line in the same night, sir," the sergeant answered. "But yes, sir, I'll reconnoiter wherever you want and be back here well before dawn. I can be ready in 15 minutes.
"Let's send 3 probes then. Center, left, and right. But I think we should send clone commandos," Anakin said.
"Begging your pardon, sir, but I'm the best there is for this job. Only I can't do the whole line myself. Give me whatever sector you want and I'll get the information you need."
"Very well. Sergeant, you take the right flank."
Aside, Halcyon told Anakin,
"You select commandos to do the center and left flank."
Then back to Lalox.
"The former strong point Isabel will be your jumping off place, and that'll be where you'll come back through our lines. How many troopers will you need?"
"Just me, sir."
"Only yourself?"
Halcyon looked at Slake, who shrugged.
"What if something happens, Sergeant? How will we get your report?"
"Nothing will happen to me." "I'd like to go with him," Grudo said.
"Ridiculous," Slake snorted.
"Orodian should be good on patrol, sir," Sergeant Lalox said. "They're experts at getting into places where they aren't wanted, and getting back out again."
Anakin nodded.
"Grudo's in, then."
"We want to go, too," someone said.
It was one of the guards from the Nilayan, Corporal Ram Raiders.
"That's the sort of thing we're good at. We can be a great help to the sergeant."
"I'll take them," Sergeant Lalox said. "If I'm not satisfied with how they move, I'll leave them at Isabel. But that's it. 4's maybe too many as it is."
"Very well," Halcyon said. "Anakin, coordinate all this with the clone commandos. All of you meet back here in 15 minutes for a briefing."
"They won't be foolish enough to attack us at the center of our line," Porz Tarnath told his assembled commanders. "They'll send a force at the center, but it'll be a diversion. The main attack will come on one of our flanks.
Therefore, I want a strong reserve here.
He indicated a spot near the communications center.
Ready to move to reinforce any part of our line on a moment's notice. Expect probes all night tonight, and then an attack in the morning. You have your orders. We must hold this position until our reinforcements arrive, which I am confident will be very soon now.
The briefing went quickly. There were three recon teams. Team 1 would cover the left flank, Team 2 the center, and Team 3, Sergeant Lalox's team, the right flank. Each soldier on the three teams was given a comlink. No voice traffic, the intelligence chief warned them. The enemy is sure to be eavesdropping. Everyone, form up at Isabel. As soon as the barrage starts, move out. When you're ready to come back in, press the talk button on your comlinks. One long and one short for Team 1. Two long, two short for Team 2. And three long, three short for Team 3. When you've all reported you're ready to return, we'll lay down some more artillery to cover you. And that'll be your signal to come back in. As soon as you're all assembled at Isabel, Sergeant Lalox, give me one long squelch on that comlink you so heartily despise, and I'll send in the artillery. Are there any questions?
There weren't.
Isabel was a shambles. The smell of death was everywhere. In one spot, a tiny wisp of smoke filtered through a crack in a demolished bunker, a sign of a fire still smoldering. It showed a very bright glow through the infras, indicating that the fire must still be extremely hot. They wondered what was burning, and Grudo shuddered at the thought. The four team members huddled together a short distance from the other two teams, waiting for the barrage to commence. The plan was that as soon as the attack opened up, they would dash forward to follow the dry riverbed around to the right of the mesa, and then climb to the top. There were several talus slopes that could be used for that purpose closer by, but Lalox had decided to go far around to the right and emerge on the mesa almost behind the enemy line.
"They'll be waiting for us. You can bet on it," he told the other three.
The night was pitch black, illuminated only by the stars above.
Oof!
Irk sat up so suddenly he banged his head against the rock.
"Odie, I think I've got it. Give me your equipment belt."
She handed it over.
"Some light, please."
He fumbled with the pouch.
"Aha!"
he exclaimed victoriously.
"Just as I thought. Odie, this is our way out of here."
He held the vibroblade in his hand.
"Mechanics use a version of the same thing to cut the hardest metals while working on starfighters. I think we could use it to
cut rock," Odie finished.
"You bet."
Irk fitted his fingers through the activation rings.
"Don't look too closely," he said.
He squeezed the rings and applied the blade to a section of overhead rock. After a few seconds, the blade's action began to produce heat, and molten rock fragments began dripping down on the floor. He shut the device off quickly. The rock glowed faintly where he'd used the knuckler to slice a groove 25 millimeters long and 10 millimeters deep in only a few seconds.
"Say hello to the outside world."
Quickly but carefully, the four made their way along the dry riverbed, keeping close to the far bank to hide themselves as much as possible from observation by the enemy positions on the mesa far above. This proved to be a wise tactic, and in a very short time, they had worked their way to a point where the ancient river had changed its course away from the mesa. The friendly artillery barrage roared and split the sky above with bright flashes, and soon counter-battery fire began ranging down onto Halcyon's positions. The entire universe seemed to be consumed in the fiery holocaust. They crawled one by one over the riverbank and picked their way over the plain that separated it from the steep mesa walls. Each carried a blaster pistol as his main weapon, but nothing heavier. After an hour, they had made their way across the plateau to the slope of the mesa, at a point Lalox judged to be somewhat behind the right wing of the enemy's positions. That was where they would negotiate the steep cliff to come out at the base of the hills that dominated that end of the line. Lalox knew this ground, had been over it numerous times. This end of the enemy's defenses was anchored in the two small hills that occupied a commanding position on the mesa. A thin line of skirmishers had been posted just above the plain. But since the hills themselves could only be approached from the front through a forest of boulders, some bigger than Banthas, the advanced sentry posts, Lalox hoped, were considered sufficient security to warn of an attack. He signaled for a halt. Gradually, the barrages ceased. An unnatural quiet descended on the battlefield, and it was plunged again into impenetrable darkness.